I was watching one of your videos on Instagram, and you were doing this kind of satire where you were telling a patient to not think about his symptoms, that the best thing you could do is to not think about it, and because the reason it's feeling worse is because they're thinking about it. So what should they be doing instead? Because we have patients all the time, probably most often for tinnitus, sometimes our vestibular patients that thinking about it does make it worse for them. It exacerbates it because it's they're thinking, it gets louder, it gets worse. So what should they be doing instead?
So it's a fine line between thinking or being hypervigilant about symptoms and checking in, I always say, with symptoms, right? So I say to my clients too, like, if all you do is think about your symptoms and focus on that symptom, you are absolutely going to make it worse. We know, like, absolutely tinnitus with dizziness, all the things. If you are so hyper-focused on that symptom all the time, you're going to make it worse. So it's this, but if you completely ignore your symptoms and you don't ever check in and you just keep going and going and going, and then at the end of the day, you absolutely crash or feel horrible, you've done yourself a disservice as well. And so I always say it's this, like, you need to just, like, check in with yourself, right? So, and our the way our kind of guideline is that you're allowed to continue to do stuff until your symptoms elevate by like 2 to 3 points. And that's just an indicator that you need to just pause and take a break and kind of rest. So it's like if you're going to go do a run or you're going to go do a whatever you're going to do, please don't focus on your symptoms the whole time. But like as you go through it, just like do a like 10 second check-in. It's like just close your eye, be like, how am I feeling? Like, oh, like I'm a little off dizzy, or I'm like my headache is feeling. That's like, so let's pause for 2 minutes. Let's do some palming. Let's do some breath. Let's bring those symptoms back down and let's keep going. I would say you can think of it as like a bullseye, right? So the green in the center of a target is the comfort zone. This is when they don't have any symptoms. We don't want people to just live here because then they start truly getting into a fear avoidance cycle of like, I know I'm safe here, so I'm only going to do this. And their life becomes really small. And if we never challenge symptoms and we never kind of purposely, intentionally do that, we're not going to grow. Our world's actually just going to continue to shrink. But from the green zone of the target out, you have the yellow zone. And so this is what I call like the challenge zone. So this is where symptoms are absolutely going to increase a little bit, 1 to 2 to 3 points. But you're intentionally choosing to do an activity. You're intentionally doing the physical activity. You're intentionally doing the exercise. You're intentionally doing the thing. And it's a challenge that then if you can bring your nervous system back down, it's going to come in. So now you're kind of growing this window and you're building this resiliency and this strengthening process of your nervous system. Versus outside the yellow zone is our red zone, which is our overwhelm. And that's the people that are continuously ignoring your symptoms and you're blasting through them and pushing yourself through the ceiling symptomatically, that now the nervous system is going into fight or flight or shutdown. That's not training. Like that's we've done it. We've pushed too far, and so then what happens if we can? You can think of it as almost like a chronic pain analogy. If you continuously push to that level, what is actually going to happen is your nervous system is going to start to set an alarm off or those symptoms off even sooner to try to shrink you down so that you don't keep pushing there. So we need to be working in like the green zone is where we're comfortable. But when we want to actually challenge, we want to be pushing into that yellow zone and that 2 to 3 point, and then coming back and giving us our rest so we kind of calm our nervous system down again.
What you're saying here on this, it really stands out to me because we've had multiple conversations already with other healthcare providers. And each of those healthcare providers to me is doing something unique, whether it's in the space of auditory processing or dizziness or tinnitus, that these are, I'll use a generic term of pathologies that don't have an easy management structure. They don't have a simple path to follow. So there comes into the discussion nervous system regulation. And for people who are seemingly successful providers and successful navigators of their symptoms in these spaces, nervous system regulation is part of the conversation and part of the discussion. And what we're also finding is the providers that are having these more out-of-the-box holistic conversations beyond the immediate symptom are the providers who are looking toward social media and expanding in spaces outside of the four walls of their clinic. And I'm interested to hear more about your thought process and your development to seek educating the public, treating, having people travel to you, treating people all over the world, and not just feeling confined as so many providers do to the space of their office.
So I'm a dreamer. I'm a visionary. I always have, like, growing up, it was the, like, Natasha, think realistically
Boo.
person. And so I've always had big dreams and big goals and kind of big missions. And in the concussion space, I mean, I love treating. I love being in the energy in my clinic is phenomenal. I have a team of 10, and I get to mentor them, and it's fantastic. But there's so many people out there that, the stories that I don't know what it is, but, like, people share their stories with me. And some of the stories I hear infuriate the f out of me. And when you hear them over and over and over again, it's that piece of, like, something needs to change. And I have a huge heart. I wear it on my sleeve. And that's kind of, I should preface too, like, it's my dad had a brain injury when I was 17. And it turned my family's life upside down. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 17 years old because of his symptoms and that, how it, like, broke our relationship. I always say we are lucky, and I feel super blessed that we've now rebuilt our relationship. I'm 41 now, so it's been, like, over the years, and we have a fabulous relationship now. But I see the effects concussion can have on an individual's life, but on the family's life as well. And for me, when I started hearing more and more of these stories, and then hearing that people were told this false information of this is how you have to accept it, it just kind of fueled this, it, like, lit this bonfire in my stomach, basically. And I was like, I need to, my job is to help change this and to help change this narrative. That's what initially took me to social media. Was it's like, how can I help spread information and awareness and hope for people to know that, A, there can be another way? So that's what initially took me to social. And I've done a lot of different things in the online space, to be honest. I've done a bunch of different coaching programs for people. My very first program, it's so funny. I don't delete it. I rarely delete anything from my social. So I started my social media probably in, like, 2018 or 19. If you scroll back,
Everybody says that about their old stuff.
oh my goodness. But my very first online program was called Concussion Coach. And it was for people with concussion, and I had no idea what I was doing in the online sense of things. But I started to make connections with individuals on a healing journey from all over. And I started to be able to positively impact people's lives, whether they paid me or not. And even so, my podcast, for example, like, the amount of messages I get on my podcast of people being like, Natasha, like, your podcast has given me hope, and I now have the proper questions to ask my therapist. Like, this has changed the game for me. And I'm like, that's why we do what we do, right? I mean, yes, I need to make money. I have a family and all these things too. But truly, like, it was that fire of what I saw in the, like, in the four walls of my clinic that made me want to have a bigger impact in this. And then, honestly, it just grew. And, I had a client once say, like, everyone needs to fly to Natasha when they get this. I'm like, I'm one person. And so then also for me, it was like, what is my goal, really? And my goal was to increase the knowledge and the awareness so that individuals weren't needing to come fly to me 6 years later, 4 years later. And so it was that piece of, this was also what kind of led to my shift to mentoring clinicians, was I could continue to do coaching programs for people on a healing journey. And I do have a membership for people on a healing journey as well, still as well. But then I'm helping the individual person who's already been stuck and seen these people. And I was like, what's the next level? Well, if I can train clinicians in my, like, with a framework and a very, like, deep integrated holistic science approach to care, which is what I mentor on, that gets changed faster for your clients. If I can mentor clinicians in that, then that's going to domino to hundreds and thousands of patients over the years getting better care sooner to get change. So that's what led me from my step to into mentoring clinicians a few years ago was, I'm like, how can I make greater change in people's lives? And it's supporting the people like you and I and the other physios and chiros and ATs out there who are the ones seeing the patients, because I'm not going to change the specialists' minds. Mm-hmm. And in truth, the specialists are never the ones doing the rehab anyways. So that's kind of, and so now social media is very much, you know, I love when it, that's how we connected, right? Like, right. I love when social media works the way it was intended to work.
Absolutely. There are some pros of it.
Right. And I've made some beautiful relationships over the years with other, like with other professionals. Honestly, most of my, a huge portion of the individuals that fly to come work with me is because they find me on social, and they either find me on social media or they find my podcast, or they're part of my, like, again, I have this free call for people every month on a healing journey as well. They're part of that free call. And then they eventually come work with me in my clinic, not all of them. And that's totally fine. Or we'll connect them with people around the world who either I've trained or I know are amazing clinicians to help them seek the appropriate care. I don't remember what the question was. I just tangented forever. I'm sorry.
No, it actually fits. It ties in really well, because a common theme we talk about here is asking our guests how they feel they've been a part of people's stories, or how people have been a part of your story. And you pretty much just answered that of, it seems like you've made an impact on a lot of people, and a lot of people have made an impact on you.
Absolutely. I always say, like, what keeps me going? It's not the objective outcomes. It's not how the graph looks different at the end of the week, which, don't we, that gets me super excited at the moment. But the part that actually, like, continues to fuel my fire are the stories my clients continue. I get emails from people weeks, months, and years later being like, Natasha, I just did this. Thank you so much. Like, one of our clients just went to, she's in India right now. She might still be there. And she's like, I never would have been able to do this without the work we did. Or like the client who was like, I never thought I'd be able to have children because my health was so bad. And like, I'm pregnant.
That must be so heartwarming to hear that.
Oh, I cry. I cry all the freaking time. Like, I am such a, I'm such an empath, and like such, like, and so like I get these emails and I get these messages or I get these photos. That is what keeps me going.
That's why you do it.
That's why I do it.
There's another concept that we've kind of hit on, which is how everyone has their unique stories, but then there's common threads among those stories. And I had mentioned before the diagnoses and the symptoms that people struggle with, whether it's dizziness, tinnitus, auditory processing, concussion-related symptoms, that there are common threads in these stories. And what we're finding that is help leading to success is the idea of hope, that the mm-hmm. clinician is instilling a sense of hope in their patient, because the clinician knows things can get better. They're an expert in their field and treat their patients in a way that has led them to understand this can be better than it is. And those that are successful at communicating that to their patients, like you are, and like some of our other guests are, the impact this is having on lives and then the positive downstream effect that's having on lives is phenomenal. And hearing your stories about this, just seeing another tie-in to how these holistic approaches to healthcare really, really help the patient and achieve positive outcomes with people who have been struggling for a long period of time.
I actually just did a podcast episode on the science of hope, because it comes out of the positive psychology space. And it's when they describe it, they think of it as, it's almost like a mindset. And there's two components to it. And there's one component that is, the provider is, I can absolutely, like, it's the piece that they need our help with. And so the two elements are, is like the thought of agency. So that's the, like, I know I can get better. I can do this. Like, that's where our clients excel most of the time. And then the second part of that is the pathway thinking. So it's like, I know I can do this. I can do it. How do I do this? And one of the big pieces where people really start to get defeated and that hope really starts to become extinguished, truthfully, is when they can't see their way through the woods. They can't see that next step. They can't see that path. And so they feel like they're spinning in circles. And so as a clinician, when you can come into a session or work with someone or do an assessment and be like, hey, like, this isn't the way you have to be. This is not a new normal. But here's how we can start to look come through this. When you can give someone and shine light on that path of how they're going to do it, that resparks the full kind of concept of hope and helps them keep going forward.
One last thing I wanted to ask about before we wrap up, and Michelle can certainly speak better to this than I could. Earlier on in the discussion, we brought up auditory processing, and I'm curious in how you encounter that in concussion. I asked the question earlier about the similar presentations in concussion and stroke, if they are or are not. And the origin of that question was a few weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast, and it was Senator John Fetterman, and he was talking to Joe Rogan, and he had in front of him a screen that was transcribing the speech for him. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't entirely explain why he needed this device, and Joe wasn't sure why he needed it either, but they were trying to talk through understanding what this device was doing for him. And it sounded like a device that was aiding some sort of auditory processing issue he was dealing with post-stroke, because he could visually read the words in the question and the conversation, but processing the auditory information he was struggling with significantly. So that led to the origin of that question, but I'm curious where auditory processing falls within stroke management.
Stroke or concussion?
I'm sorry, concussion. Yes.
Okay. Great question, and one that I think needs more attention, to be honest. So I will bluntly say, like, when I do a multi-systems assessment, the system that I definitely am weak in is auditory. We don't ever learn it. So I do like an auditory localization screen, like super rudimentary screen. but in terms of like processing, testing like sounds and like I don't have the ability to do that. However, I just connected with an audiologist from South Africa who was a gem of a human, and gave me a couple tools to help me screen for it better in my clinic to then refer to the appropriate people. So the way I see it show up in some of my clients is obviously, and I've read studies around it, which is what started to trigger my thought process around people getting diagnosed with cognitive impairment because of the central auditory processing piece. Because if you can't process the incoming information properly, that which is what we talk about in concussion, and which is what concussion does. Concussion impairs your ability to integrate the incoming sensory information, and then therefore how we kind of share and show up and express in the world. And so vision and sound are two major senses to help us take in the information. And so if you can't process that incoming information, it's going to affect the upstream cognitive processing. And so I've read numerous studies at this point where it's like people with central auditory processing disorders are getting misdiagnosed with cognitive impairments because of that pathway basically being injured or damaged or whatever you want to say. So for me, it started to raise the question of how we're not screening the system in our concussion clients. Very few people are. And yet cognition is one of memory, all those pieces is one of the biggest complaints for people with long-term concussion symptoms. The way I approach things is any of the systems not integrating properly can impact concussion, can impact cognition, and will impact cognition. But if I say that if I'm doing a thorough assessment piece, how do I also factor in the auditory processing piece? And so for me, it's the question right now of like, if people are saying they have a really hard time processing multiple conversations or certain pitches of like certain conversation tones and pitch of voice. If I have to repeat myself a lot, is always a flag for me. Now, sometimes it's because I talk way too fast, but if I'm speaking in a normal tone and it's just that person and I in the room and they're like, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Like, they did not comprehend what came out of my mouth. So I have these little flags for myself and I'm like, we might want to look at this piece. The tricky piece for me at this point is honestly, like, at what point do I pull that into someone's treatment plan? And I do think there's some fundamental pieces that need to be done before auditory processing would come into the place, but I think I think in the concussion world, especially the persistent concussion world, there needs to be a better process to teach clinicians how we can screen for it and flag for it. And so that's actually what I just had a conversation about with another audiologist a couple weeks ago. And so she gave me some tools to be able to do that. So I'm going to start to pull that into my practice in a little bit more of a thorough way. So for me, I think it's going to be when I start to see some of these like little yellow flags, how can I then, I have the ability to screen that then if this kind of report comes up as this, then I can refer to the appropriate people for a deeper assessment and treatment.
Makes sense.
I actually have one more question for you also. Yeah. For anyone who's out there listening, whether they are themselves dealing with recovery from a concussion or other vestibular issues, traumatic brain injury, when for anybody out there who is on their road to recovery but might be struggling, what is something you would want for them to know as they're going through this process?
I always keep this really general and I just say, like, don't give up hope. Like, please know that this isn't how you have to live. Please know that there are clinicians out there. I realize sometimes it can feel like you're sifting through a needle in a haystack, but there are clinicians out there who can help you. Reach out to me. If I know someone in your area, I will tell you who they are. I get a lot of those questions too. and just don't stop asking. I always say too, especially with social media being as it is, be the person that reaches out. Right? People are so afraid, I think, in the society to be the reach out, to be that person. All someone can never do is ignore your DM or say no. And if they ignore your DM or say no, you're in the exact same place that you started. But that person could also say, yeah, I actually know someone who lives in Jersey. Here's their website.
100%.
Right? So just ask.
We reach get out those and ask. Sorts of questions all the time. And it's so easy to direct somebody.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know exactly where to go, you probably know a little bit more than what they're going to find otherwise. And why don't you let everybody know where they can find you and how they can connect with you?
Yeah. So the easiest place is Instagram. So my Instagram is at natasha.wilch. My podcast is called the Concussion Nerds Podcast. If you are on a healing journey and I have like nerd glasses and all. So it's the Concussion Nerds Podcast where we talk about a whole lot of stuff, very much the holistic impact of concussion and healing on life. And then my email is just hello@natashawilch.com as well. So,
and we'll link to that in the description of the episode. And where your podcast is on all streaming sites,
all streaming systems. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Natasha Wilch, thank you so much for your time and being on the Hear Us Out podcast. We're grateful for all your valuable information.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure.